Hi there, and welcome to the Tennisworthy podcast, which is brought to you by one of the world's leading guardians of the history of tennis, the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Chris Bowers, and over the past couple of years, the Hall of Fame has produced a podcast that's featured in-depth interviews with some of the legends of the sport. There'll be more in 2025, but let's relive some of the most interesting contributions made over the past 12 months. Today we're focusing on how you notice which of the many youngsters who play the game might be the champion we'll all be talking about 10 or 15 years down the track. In most of our interviews with champions, we've asked the question, what were you doing as a junior that made you win matches against fellow juniors who must have had roughly the same forehands and backhands as you did? As you'll hear, we harvested a wide range of answers, which tells us there's no one thing that makes a potential champion stand out. But there are certain themes running through the answers. Let's start with the Australian great Ken Rosewall. When he was a junior, what was he doing that made him win matches against older, taller and stronger kids?
I think my game was built on consistency and control. So I think it was just because I kept the ball in play and I moved fairly quickly for a smaller person. Like, you know, my footwork was pretty good, and that's what my father kind of always talked about, having good footwork and good movement around the court. So I think when I played boys that were a little bit older than I was, I really kind of wore them down with my consistency and on the court.
How much was having learnt on clay a factor in that? Because most tennis in those days was played on grass, which is a very different surface to the stuff you grew up on.
Well, that's right. But I think the clay courts were a good grounding for learning on any type of surface or playing on any kind of surface because it helped you with your footwork. And if you had to slide, you know, because sometimes the clay courts were quite slippery. You know, knowing that if I became much better, that I would have to play more on the grass courts. I kind of had that experience at the schoolboys and schoolgirls events that they had yearly at the White City Tennis Courts in Sydney. You know, I think I enjoyed playing on grass. I mean, the grass courts were very good, and you know, I could still win my matches at that age from playing from the back of the court. I liked to volley, and when I was home, I practiced my volley most times against the wall. So as my game progressed, I became a good volleyer.
Ken Rosewall, and the buzzwords in that answer were consistency, footwork and practice. Recognising the need to have a volley for playing on grass, he put in the work when he was at home, often volleying against the wall, which is a lot harder to do than hitting ground strokes. Another player who got into the heads of older players who couldn't handle a younger kid beating them was the former world number two, Tommy Haas. He was six when he was entered in under-10s tournaments, which would have made it a tough test of street credibility for any 10-year-old who couldn't put little Tommy away.
They couldn't quite believe that I was, so competitive and didn't really miss much. And for some reason, you know, in the club, I at six was sort of the best under the 10s. And I remember actually one situation incredibly well when I think I won it. The opponent that I played, who was 10 at the time, he was at least probably, you know, a head and a half taller than I was. And when he lost, he couldn't really take it. And he ran around the court and left the court and was just screaming in many ways. So it took about 5 minutes for him to actually come back to me and shake my hand after that match.
What were you doing better than kids 3-4 years older than you?
I think, again, I was just really consistent. You know, every time for me, it was like, you know, hitting the ball gave me such great feeling and just competing and wanting to win just kind of came natural. I think you could also tell that when it didn't go so well, which obviously there were days like that as well, you could always, you know, see a certain side of mine as well where, you know, I would kind of, you know, lose it and yell and not be happy and probably threw my racket here and there and just trying or waiting to get my next chance, my next opportunity, wait for the next day to do better. And that was sort of, I think, the mindset that I had.
Tommy Haas talking about consistency and also the mindset to learn from defeats and come back better the next day. I think we can all imagine Ken Rosewall and Tommy Haas getting so many balls back that they end up driving their junior opponents crazy. But some youngsters take a more direct route. Jim Courier won 4 major singles titles and spent 58 weeks at the top of the world rankings. He says the key to him winning junior matches was an attribute that served him well at all levels of the game.
I think my instincts were really good. From what I hear, Chris, my mom tells me that even in the when I was 8 and 9 and 10 years old, when it was pressure moments in matches, I was aggressive. I had the thirst for those moments, and I didn't back down. I wasn't afraid to play at those moments. Effectively, if we're talking about a basketball team, I didn't play basketball as a kid, but if I was on a basketball team, I'd be the one that wanted the ball as the buzzer beater was coming. I wanted the shot. I didn't want to pass the ball and give up responsibility. I embraced pressure, and I think that's something that was evident pretty early from what my mom tells me.
Was that just how you were, or do you think somebody taught you to seize difficult moments?
I think that's who I am. And it's funny when you nowadays we have the luxury of being able to watch some of our great current players when they were young kids on YouTube. There's wonderful video of them playing, and you can see those instincts in someone like Alcaraz. His aggressive instincts, his instinct for his thirst for danger in big moments was there from the beginning, it appears. And I think that's true of most players. I think most players have a personality type that really shows in the choices they make when the chips are down.
Jim Courier on his thirst for danger in the big moments. How often do we see that? The player who wins isn't necessarily the better player, but is often the one who's less scared to lose, such that he or she is happy to take risks on the points that really decide a match. One of the most interesting interviews of 2024 in the Tennis Worthy podcast series was with the former Wimbledon champion Conchita Martinez. She picked up the game at the age of 9 and honed her strokes hitting against a wall. But when she came to playing junior tournaments, what did she do better than her opponents to get the results that saw her reach the fourth round of Roland Garros at just 16?
I'm not sure that I have the answer to that, but I can speak for myself. Like, I was very perfectionist. I didn't hit a shot that, you know, I'm like, okay, that's the one. I will practice and hit over and over and over. I don't know if they hit the same as many tennis balls that I did, but I guess it's a combination of work, talent, and passion.
Did you work out a mindset for winning, or was it just a question of, today I'm playing this player, let's see if I can come out the winner?
You know, when you start, it's not that you're thinking like, when you become a professional, then you have that strategy and all of that. But I was good at a strategy, and I like to, you know, to do different things with the ball and to make my rival very uncomfortable playing against me. I don't know. Probably, yeah. I mean, at that time, you know, your state of mind is like, okay, I want to win this match, and I was very competitive and stuff like that.
Did you enjoy the close matches, or did you prefer to win 6-2, 6-1?
No, of course you prefer to win easy, but that's not the case.
But there's more problem solving in a close match.
Yeah, it is more problem solving, and it's very rewarding when you win that match, and also it can be very cruel when you lose that match. I mean, you learn from tough losses, and also, you know that if you fight every point and you're there in every point, you're gonna have a chance to win in that match. So, yeah, I mean, I had matches of every kind. No,
Conchita Martinez on her perfectionism and making her opponents feel uncomfortable on court. When we pick up the buzzwords like consistency, competitiveness, perfectionism, aggression, a lot of that comes down to hard work. But where does natural talent fit into all this? It was the former US Open runner-up and doubles great, Pam Shriver, who took us into the nature versus nurture debate when I asked her what she was doing as a junior to beat other kids who would have had similar strokes to her.
Well, I go back to the natural skill I had, which was above average hand-eye coordination. I can remember some early coaches I had. One actually ended up being my history teacher in high school, Mr. Marty McKibben. And I can remember I was about 6-7 years of age, and he'd been around sports his whole life. He was a high school coach. He coached tennis during the summer. That was his job during the summer, so he wasn't full-time. But he looked at me one time and he said, "Pam, I've never seen anybody with such good natural hand-eye coordination." And he'd been a three-sport athlete at a college, Bucknell, growing up, and so he'd been around sports a long time, and that was the first time I thought, I've got a skill here that I need to develop.
You're laying a lot of value on the natural ability that you had. Have you engaged a lot with the nature-nurture debate? And have you got any sort of thoughts on where the percentage falls?
I think in some skill set, it varies. So I think on your physical gifts, I think a lot of it is nature. I feel something like, say, mindset training that is becoming such a big part of today's approach for the athlete, and to have people, someone on your team that can help you with the mindset, I think that can be nurtured a lot more. I think we've learned a lot of things about the brain and how important it is to learn new things and try new things and have that growth mindset. And I do think you can learn some traits on the mental side that are harder to just pick up. And then also you have your natural build. So I was 6 feet tall by the time I was about 14, 15 years of age. So that went into how I played as well. It was like the vision of somebody who had pretty quick hands, slow feet, but quick hands. The best place for me was up at net. And I fell in love with playing from that position.
Did anybody ever say to you, because of your physical attributes, oh, you'll make it, or possibly even you won't make it? Because a lot of coaches have a fixed idea of what actually a good tennis body is.
I never remember anybody telling me I couldn't. I actually just needed a little bit of help to realize that I had the skill set to have that as a goal, to play pro tennis, play elite level tennis. And then once I kind of like realized I do have what it takes, then I was pretty much all in to try and get as good as I could be.
Pam Shriver on how she harnessed her natural talent so she worked in the right way and developed her net game to play to her strengths. Perhaps inevitably, there's been a theme running through these excerpts, Rosewall, Haas, Courier, Martinez and Shriver, that all juniors are talented. But that's not always the case. There's ample scope for late developers, something all parents and coaches need to bear in mind when a supposedly talented youngster doesn't post massively impressive results on the junior circuit. The 1991 Wimbledon champion Michael Stich was one such late developer, as he was happy to admit about his inglorious junior career.
I was terrible. I didn't win anything. I mean, I became, you know, club champion. I like the regional champion in Northern Germany. I became champion. I always went to the German junior championship every year, and I never won a round, neither in the main draw or in the, then you have those loser competitions for the first round losers. I never won a round, and till my last German junior championship when I was 18, when I became German junior champion. And I can't tell you why that happened or what the reason was, but it seemed like before I loved playing tennis, I was talented, but I didn't necessarily only play to win. I played because I loved playing. And it seemed like then I learned that it both things have to come together.
Because I was going to say, it begs the question, why did you carry on if you kept losing all these matches? But it was just the love of the game, was it?
Well, it was a love of the game. I loved to play drop shots and serve and volley and try shots that no one else did. And at that time, I hated losing. It was not that I didn't want it to win, but my coach at the time, my junior coach, Herbie Horst, South African guy who I owe a lot to as well, he taught me at some stage that it's very much about playing percentage tennis. It's about playing the right shot at the right time to win the point. And he made me, I love playing drop shots, as I said. And he said to me, for every drop shot you play, you have to make 10 kangaroo jumps. And then I thought, like, well, if I do play too many drop shots, I have to do many of those. So just play them when it's really sensible to play it. And those are the little lessons that you learn when you have a good coach that make the difference.
But if a coach says to a junior who loves being creative on a tennis court, you've got to play the percentages, couldn't that drive out the fun?
Well, he didn't take away the creativity from me at all. He knew that I needed that. It was part of my game. But he basically put me in the right lane. You know, he said to me, well, be creative, but there is a moment when you just have to play for the point. Make it simple. Keep it simple. Make it easy and not just try to be too inventive and you might lose the point. So all those lessons I learned from him, from Nicky Pillage, obviously, from Mark Lewis, my then first professional coach, they all directed me into that way of becoming a champion.
Michael Stich, German junior champion for the first time at 18, Wimbledon champion at 22, showing us that you don't have to be beating everyone at 12 if you're going to make it to the top. And I guess the lesson from all these testimonies from the legends is that it takes lots of elements to make a champion. Consistency is probably the strongest seam running through all the answers, and getting good technique right at a young age is crucial to that. But there are different ways to get to the top, and having fun should be a constant companion. Next time, we'll be looking at how important it is for top tennis players to have a balanced life that involves a dedication to tennis, but not to the extent that all else gets excluded. And if you know anyone you think who might enjoy listening to these in-depth interviews, which are based around tennis but have relevance to all walks of life, do draw their attention to tennisfame.com/podcast, where they can find all the past editions ready to download. Or you can go to your preferred podcast platform and type in the search bar, Tennis Worthy Podcast. I'm Chris Bowers. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.